Hey guys, welcome to episode 171 of the JV Club with my guest, Joy Osmansky. I am overjoyed that she was able to do the podcast, and I hope you guys enjoy it. Listen, as many of you know, I am so woefully behind in shout outs that I need to throw a long list at you. And I am still catching up on non-email shout outs. So bear with me while I thank the following janitors, whom I adore. Emily, I want to thank you for telling me about the mint slices in New Zealand/Australia. Delish. Joseph, thanks for your comments about body hair. You know, that thing that I talked about in the Dana Gold episode. Alyssa, thank you for your email, and Megan for yours. Joshua, great meeting you at SAC Anime. Glad to be in touch with you now. Margot, my sweet, sweet Frances listener. Hello. Stephanie, thanks for the kind words about that Pro You podcast episode I did. I've been cycling up a storm, so let's keep at it, you and me. Allison, I want to thank you for your email. Actually, two Allisons. Darshan, great meeting you at SAC Anime. Kyle, thanks for your email. Chris with a K, thanks for your email. And it was so great meeting you back at Emerald City. It's never too late to tell me that. Emily, great seeing you. Different Emily. Great seeing you at SAC Anime. And Winnie, thank you for the wonderful Cora drawing that you gave me. Major shout out to you, my dear. Keep up the great work. Ronnie, thank you for your great email suggestion for guest AJ and Emmanuel and Claudia. Thanks for your emails. Claudia, thank you for the Hawaii recommendation. And Voltaire, I want to thank you for your email. Great to be in touch with you. Also someone that I met at SAC Anime. And last but not least, I want to thank everyone who so far has sent in the how did you betray your parents story that Kelly Carlin is going to be looking at. I'm going to leave that open to you guys to do again for the next week, and then I'll announce the winner on next week's episode. We've got some great versions, but I just want to extend it a little bit longer in case anyone wants to eke in their story, humorous or otherwise, and it can be one paragraph long or less. I will talk to you guys soon, and boy, I just feel like I'm forgetting 10 to 20 things I should be telling you, but we do the best we can. That's all we can do, guys. Talk to you soon.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
And I'm already starting, and these guys will just have to catch up, because we were just in the middle of talking about this idea of, you know, the theory of something versus putting it into practice and how different that is, and how useful, whether it is useful or not, to have that knowledge before it kind of kicks in. Or maybe that's not what you were saying, but that's what I was thinking. I was just thinking, like, what is it good, like, that it's so good to have that sort of plunged into your brain, even when you think this is worthless to me right now,
right?
That somewhere it's like you're sponging it somewhere, and like it actually does help. What do you think?
I think you're right, because I remember hearing those kinds of things from people who'd been in the business longer. You know, they would talk about being patient and the marathon versus a sprint and blah, blah, blah. And I would hear it, and my theoretical brain would say, yes, that's valuable.
Sounds good. Sounds real good.
And then my id would be like, fuck you. I don't want to hear that right now.
Absolutely.
I'm just miserable and terrified. And I get that that's wise, but it has no meaning for me.
Yeah.
But yes, I think you're right. This just takes time.
Yeah.
Which is the one thing in life that you can't convince anyone of.
Well, sure. And don't you feel like, just taking this immediately back into adolescence, that's one of those things that it's like there's two pieces to it. One, I think I thought or hoped that I would have worked past all of that impatience by the time I was an adult. And the short answer is no, I didn't. But the longer answer is,
But we are better. You know what I mean?
We are.
Like, if you can definitely still look at yourself now and look back and say, that would have crushed me more and for longer when I was 16, when everyone was saying, you're going to get over it. Don't worry. It just takes time. Yeah. And you're like, why don't you go fuck yourself?
Yeah.
I don't feel like I can. I can't afford time. I'm too raw. It's too hard.
I'm going to die tomorrow. Because that's what adolescence
felt like. Exactly. You know? And so it's not that bad, but it's just a weird combination of both where you hold on to things that you kind of thought maybe would go away altogether, but you also do know, you know, oh, okay, now by virtue of just the experience and time I've been on the planet, I can't keep having this afresh as if I'm have amnesia.
It'll kill you.
Emotional amnesia, you know?
Maybe it's that you learn to weed out what's valuable to hold on to and what's not. Because when I was a teenager, everything was peak.
Yes.
Right? Everything was absolutely the highest stakes.
It's like you can't determine which thing is more
important. You have no sense of judgment.
Yeah.
Right? Your heart just swells at everything and is crushed by everything, and you can't imagine a time when you don't feel.
Yeah.
You know, which is so exhausting. But I think maybe the difference for me now that I'm older is that I don't actively want to wallow in it as much as I used to.
Sure.
Because as a teenager, you're like, rub it all over myself. Yeah. It's horrible, but I love it. And now I'm like, no, actually, I don't want to live there.
Yeah. But do you feel, how much working recognition do you feel you had as a teenager that you must have, like, now I'm old enough where I can sort of say some bad choices that I made, especially in my 20s, something more recent, you know, late 20s, whatever, that I can go, even then when I was in that space, I was able to be like, I guess I must want a mess. Like, I must want to make a mess because I did choose this. I am responsible for this being here.
Yeah.
In my teenage years, I didn't think I wanted to wallow. Do you know what I mean?
God,
but
no,
now I look at it and I'm like, oh, there's something so delicious about how much we just wallowed in it. But at the time, you do feel like, what? I don't want to feel this way.
No, you're completely put upon as a teenager. Yeah. You feel like all the outside forces in the world are victimizing you. For whatever reason, you're the target, right?
Yes.
And like, no, I don't think I either saw that I was actively choosing to
But when I think about it, I'm like, oh my God, the music, I was like, all the things that you think they're drawing to you as a magnet, but it's just this stuff that helps you understand what you're feeling.
Sure.
But it starts, the big picture, when you pull out, it starts to look like you're just like, oh my God,
I
just wanted to.
Perpetuating the misery.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
So let me listen to this Chicago song over and over again so I can feel worse and worse. Oh God. The amount of Chicago I listened to.
Did you really?
Oh, so much Chicago.
Oh my God. What was your favorite Chicago song?
I can't. Okay,
I feel like I know sad Peter Cetera songs even more than Chicago.
Here's the embarrassing thing about my musical life, and this has been true my whole life. I don't know any names of songs. I don't now know any names of songs.
Okay.
I know bands, and if you start playing something, I can sing you the chorus. But I'm not one of those people. I have friends who are encyclopedic with music, and they can go back in their file cabinet of music and pull something out that recalls a specific moment in their lives. Say the artist, if it was a live performance, when it happened. I can't do that. I can't do that. So Chicago, I don't know anything. Anything. And were there two lead singers of Chicago?
That seems right. That seems like Peter Cetera was like the main guy, and then maybe there's somebody else who I don't know because I only know Peter Cetera's name.
Maybe that's a reflection of how selfish I was as a teenager. I was only like, how does this music serve me?
Sure.
I don't need to know any information about it.
Well, that's interesting because I would say that, and I've talked about this on the podcast before, is that I had much more obsessive compulsive, and I don't mean that in a disrespectful way to those of you who have been diagnosed, because certainly I have those tendencies in a medical way as well, but that sort of, let's just say obsessive, cataloging of knowledge, just like you explained, that I had that way more as a teenager than I do now. I talk on the podcast about how I'm like, oh, I love that band. Couldn't tell you a single person's name in the band.
No.
But back in the day,
I felt like
I needed to know that. But if you didn't feel like that, then I wonder what it was in my brain that like did that and then kind of let go of that.
I'm trying to think of what it
like,
was.
Like, was there
something?
Yeah, exactly. That's my next
question.
Like,
I wasn't into sports. I'm still profoundly unathletic. Uh-huh. And, so I'm trying to think of what I cataloged. I feel like I cataloged a lot of TV shows because I was super – I was the kid who snuck out late to watch Arsenio after uh-huh. everyone had gone to bed, like that kind of thing. I was obsessed with late night TV.
Isn't
and
that
sitcoms
interesting?
And stuff like
yeah.
that. Yeah.
I never watched late night shows.
That and was always like in private, though. Yeah. I was never interested in sharing it with anyone. Yeah. I just wanted to be alone in front of the glowing of that TV and
sure.
you know, way too close, like we were always told. Uh-huh. Even though that was total bollocks, right? Didn't that turn out to be bullshit?
So. Like, I don't really know.
Which is something
that
our parents
kind of
told
stuff,
us.
But. Yeah. That kind of stuff I'm not ever sure about because it certainly seems like it would still make sense. But
like
I do
the
feel
microwave
like
thing. Right. Like, don't stand too close yeah. to the microwave. Here we are with these cell phones pressed against our brains. And we're like, actually, that's more concerning.
Oh, yeah. But maybe yeah. all of it. We'll find out. Eh,
we're
not
all
good.
Dying.
No.
I mean, God. I go through these periods of time where I'm profoundly afraid of dying.
Me too.
And then it'll pass and I'll be okay. And then
and
something will happen. And
is that, you think that it is triggered by something or do you think that it's just
well,
the waves
of... Well, my
therapist
would say...
Yes. Shout out to your therapist.
Yes, and bless her heart.
Now, she called me before you came to do the podcast, told me a few things. So
what a relief,
I'm just
actually.
Yeah, no, I'm
so
well-stocked.
Everything I'm saying is
Joy,
in some
I,
sort of psychological
almost
context.
Almost everything, yes.
Thank
I'm able
God.
To just put
oh,
it right
well,
into a little box.
That makes me feel really free yeah. to say anything yeah. I want then because you already know it's couched in some sort of... medical explanation.
Pun intended, couch.
Oh my God. And I'm on a couch. No, I think she, if I'll express that, she'll say, what happened in your day? Because, mm-hmm. yeah, oftentimes you can trace it back to something. Although I have this wariness of being too analytical with myself because I'm already that way. So I feel like if I then have to pace back through my day
well,
and examine
sure.
every...
You'll find some new thing. It's like giving yourself oh. a mental CAT scan,
oh,
right?
Yes.
You're like, oh,
yes.
I... As long as I continue to do that, I'm going to find some sort of weird aberration that I can then pick at and freak out about.
Right, like the scab. Like,
yeah.
I will never not find something
yeah, me
to
too.
Be troubled over.
Me too.
So it's probably better in a lot of ways for me to not look too
yeah.
hard. But the therapy thing is positive, and I really, it's something that I came to late in life, relatively, I feel like, because I resisted it for so long.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
by the way, where were you a teenager, I should ask?
Olympia, Washington.
I mean, I love Olympia.
You do?
Oh, yeah, because one of my dad's best friends lives in Olympia.
Oh, my God.
And he's a child's dentist, and he was one of the first children's dentists to do the whole, I will love it if for some reason you went to this dentist. I don't know
I
how.
I may have.
It's hard to say because he might have...
After my time.
It might have been after you
what's
and I were both really
name?
Little kids. His name is, his last name is Saltis. It would be Dr. Saltis. Dr. Greg Saltis. P-S-A-T.
I feel like I know that name.
Well, it was kind of a big deal because he's the first person who had, like, as far as I know, because I feel like I remember him winning some sort of dental award. No, I don't know if it was a giant gold tooth or
I love
what.
That
but
that's in your
No, I know. It's
in
there.
In your mind
Shout
somewhere.
Out to his kids. Sometimes they listen to the podcast. What's up, Reed and Erica? You can correct me if I'm incorrect about this, but I remember going to visit when I was a teenager. My dad and I did a road trip that
oh.
included staying with them, and my dad always stays with them in Olympia, although I'm not sure they're in the same place they were, but they took me to Greg's office so we could see, and it's a giant circular room. There's no private, like, oh, this little kid is off screaming in a corner
right.
in a private room. It's like all the kids would be in a chair seeing each other. So there's no sort
there's
of scary.
There's a community of fear.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
no,
that's
kind
good.
Of.
No, but
you
that's
know, it's
good.
Like this very open, friendly, don't worry environment.
And that's funny because isn't the circular pen also something they employ with wolves who
Probably.
Are in captivity? That they because, you know, those old
the
traditional
edges
squares.
Of the kind of
which
pacing
makes total
the edges.
Sense,
yeah.
right? Wall,
yeah.
wall. You just keep hitting a flat surface.
To not have that fluid.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting? I didn't think about that at
but
all, but that totally makes sense. Yeah.
Well, that's brilliant. And how thoughtful of a dentist to do that for children,
I
especially.
Know.
Because I actually never minded going to the dentist.
I didn't either because my dad was friends with dentists.
Yeah.
So somehow
I had a
I was
really
like,
great.
Okay.
And you always got your picture taken, then it went up on the wall, which was also brilliant because then it was like evidence and proof that you had braved this thing.
Sure, sure.
But y'all's got a treat, and I don't know.
And you have very nice teeth, Joy, so.
Well, that's thank you to my adult orthodontist.
Aha. Oh, an adult orthodontist.
Oh, yeah.
Did you have braces later?
Yeah,
what
I grew up with, like, my top teeth were always pretty straight, but my bottom teeth were super crooked, and it was something that I always actually liked.
Uh-huh.
like it was imperfection that I liked. And still to this day, part of me is like, why didn't I just chill out and not worry about it? Uh-huh. But then when I started being on TV and stuff, I would see that and I would get totally distracted by it.
Right.
I'm sure no one else gave a shit, but I was like, why are your teeth all weird?
Thing about what we do is like it.
The self-scrutiny, though.
The self-scrutiny is so gross and it's kind of impossible to avoid.
It is. And so I guess I was like, all right, I'll make this one concession to cosmetic beauty and I'll freaking go get Invisalign.
Yeah.
So I did. And it was great. And yes, now I feel...
just so you know, guys, she did a little cute gnashing of her teeth. Like she was checking in with them. You checked in with your lower teeth for a second.
I like them.
Yeah. Everybody's okay down there?
Yeah. Great. I feel okay about this.
All right, good. Yeah. Well, so I love Olympia. I'm glad I managed to make that about me.
No, but that's fantastic that you know it.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's south of you would fly into Seattle, SeaTac, I guess. And it's south of Seattle, Tacoma.
About an hour and a half. It's right at the bottom of Puget Sound there. And
so beautiful.
Oh, it is. And I didn't really get it until I left. Mm-hmm. You know, like I always
think it was just what you knew because.
Yeah, because when Corey and I took him there, I don't know, a number of years ago for the first time.
That's Joy's husband.
Yes. But Corey Brill. And he grew up in Ohio, which is lovely in its own right. But one of the first things he said when we were walking around was how dramatic it is there.
Mm-hmm.
And that had never occurred to me, but it's true. The trees just pierce into the sky, and the colors that are created by the almost constant rainfall are so multi and hued, and it is gorgeous there.
Yeah. Isn't it nice to be able to put on – that's the best part when you put on someone else's glasses because that's what it is in Arizona too. Like I grew up in the Sonoran Desert, and it didn't mean anything to me other than just like it's hot and there's a lot of dangerous stuff there.
Yeah.
But now to go back and see the just like endless stretch of mountains with saguaros on it, it is very dramatic. That's a great word for it. And you sort of, you almost see it like you're seeing it gross, but like in a nature documentary. Like somehow you pull back and
you're
see
in planet
it.
Earth.
That's right.
Like,
that's
my God, I live in an amazing place.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I think I really liked growing up there.
Did you have brothers and sisters?
Yes, one younger sister.
And then did your parents stay together? Or?
Yes, they did. My mom has passed on, but my dad and my sister now live in Arizona, in Prescott. Well, in the area. My dad lives in Prescott Valley,
I used to go to Prescott every summer.
Oh, it's gorgeous there.
And then some in winters and stuff, too, because my both grandparents
live there. It feels like an alien landscape to me. I have a little trouble. Every time I go, I get a little, like I can feel my shoulders go up.
Interesting. Just,
it's so different from where I grew up.
And and that's up in the kind of high desert / ponderosa pine country.
Mm-hmm.
Now we really are doing a documentary. But it is, because then you get a little bit of the like granite rock the same way you would in Sedona, although it's not as red.
But it is also dramatic.
Mm-hmm, very dramatic.
But it's tricky for me. And I think because my mom died in Phoenix, I have this weird...
When did
she
die, if you don't mind my asking?
2006.
Okay.
Yeah, not
she died. And your parents lived in Phoenix together and she...
No, that's the thing. Okay. So they had moved to Prescott area and then she was down in Phoenix in basically what was basically a hospice.
Yeah.
And I have, I can say it freely. I dislike Phoenix. I don't think I will ever have a positive association with Phoenix.
I mean, I don't have a positive association.
But especially because of that.
Sure.
But so all of Arizona feels kind of a little wonky to me.
That couldn't make more sense.
Yeah.
That couldn't make more sense.
But my dad and my sister seem really happy there. And I think my dad
Because they've made all of these new memories because they're there. And that's what's hard is when you have a place where you have this one association or a couple of profound and profoundly negative associations, boy, it's hard to push past that.
Yeah, you're right, of course. And because they live
also,
there.
Also, listen, don't feel that you have to push past it with Phoenix because it's really, you don't have to push past it. All due respect. Listen, you Phoenicians, you know that I'm from Tucson and there's a real loyalty there. And certainly with Prescott and Flagstaff. But I think, maybe it's almost like, do you get outside of the Prescott area when you do visit?
Well, I've been to Sedona and Flagstaff.
Because those are more places I would say, like, so much of Arizona seems so compartmentalized in terms of, like, Phoenix feels one way, Prescott feels another way. Flagstaff feels entirely another way, which is where I went to school for 2 years. The Grand Canyon is its own weird thing.
You're
Sedona
right.
certainly is its own universe.
Oh, Sedona is its own dimension, I feel like, which was awesome
really
when I went there.
Yeah. But, that's a way, that for me, I guess that's what I'm saying. And I say that too, because when I was in college in Flagstaff, I was having these horrible anxiety attacks that mostly were tied to going back to Tucson. And I think
it
was, part of it was that I had having to go home there when I had wanted so much to get away from there because of the weather, but also going back to your point about like having these intense feelings or memories, I think when I started having like all my kind of freakouts when I was a freshman in college, when I would go home, I was so hyperstimulated by having lived there for 16, 17 years and every corner had a memory attached to it.
Yeah, it's
it was too much.
It's too much.
And I would just get overwhelmed and like need to sort of like, how do you kind of shut out that out? Because Flagstaff was so fresh to me and I had made this kind of new life for myself. Mm-hmm. And there was something very incongruous about that and very scary to me on some level. And I still can't put my finger on it.
It's an interesting phenomenon because some people from my hometown really rooted there and love it and have no desire to leave. And that's great. I respect that. But I also was like, get me the hell out of here.
Yeah.
And like I said, I've come to appreciate it more now that I'm not there anymore. But I was itching to go.
You were. Oh, was it a small community, Olympia?
Yeah.
And how big was your school and stuff? Did you sort of go to school with the same kids all through like K through 12?
Yeah, pretty much. Like high school was the point where more schools joined.
Right.
So that was super exciting.
Right.
But I feel like I have a terrible memory of I think there are about 1,200 people in my high school.
Yeah.
Maybe.
By the way, I have no idea about mine.
I know.
I'm really bad at that.
I am too. I think maybe I didn't go to the high school my senior year because I was so desperate to get out.
Oh, yeah.
I did one of those. Running start? Yeah, is that what it's called? Running start?
Oh, I don't know. That
I'm not confusing
like a thing.
That with like No Child Left Behind. Okay, running start. Yeah, well, you could take classes and then maybe get college credit. But I didn't care if that happened or not. I just wanted out.
Isn't that interesting?
That's
a real itch. Can you pinpoint? Was it social experiences that weren't working for you? Was it just like a restlessness in the classroom?
Yes. Yes.
Uh-huh.
Global. Uh-huh. Yes. I think. High school, I've always, that's the weird thing is I've always loved being a student. Like I could easily probably go back and be a student right now.
I feel the same way about
it. I've thought about it actually.
Yeah.
I'm like, can I stall life for a little while and get a PhD
or
something? But I loved being a student, but the construct of school and all the politics and all the social bullshit, it was really hard for me. It drove me crazy. And I wasn't particularly good at it. Like, man, you know, you see those people in middle school and high school who get it. They know the angle. They play it really well. I'm not sure what cost that has for them sometimes, but I was not good at that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was friends with lots of different kinds of folks, but I certainly was never, nor really ever wanted to be the popular. It seemed like so much pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And just
was
exhausting.
Sports a big thing? Like, what was the sort of the big thing, if there was one, at your school? Because, you know, some schools have, like, a great arts department, or some of them have a big sports thing. Or
man, if my school had a great arts department, I wonder what I would be like now. I guess sports. We weren't particularly good at
anything.
It was
a public school, eh?
Yeah, it was a public school. It was your basic public school. There was not a whole lot of diversity, which was something that more and more in retrospect, I'm able to be like, oh, yeah, that wasn't so hot then.
Well, that was my next question is because I can't tell about, you know, because Seattle is fairly diverse, right? And so I can't tell. I wasn't sure in my mind. I was thinking, like, I wonder if there were other ethnically Asian backgrounds that you were interacting with or if it. And also, you know, I guess that's.
I think we were drawn to each other, the tiny population that did exist. We were all like, oh, recognition, come sit with me. And my best friend growing up was half Japanese, and I think I was drawn to her for so many other reasons. But yeah, now that I look back, I think we did sort of tend to hover at least in each other's orbits just for a sense of comfort.
What is your actual ethnic background? I guess that's a really kind of poignant question for me to ask.
Well, this is interesting because I was adopted from Korea as a baby. And so I grew up ostensibly thinking I was ethnically Korean. So I took one of those genetic tests.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Your parents straight up white?
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
straight up, as white as white can be.
Yeah.
I was finally like, oh, the science exists. I could actually learn that.
God, I wonder how much more curiosity / trepidation someone in your position would have doing that versus someone like me who looks exactly like my parents. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't feel like there's going to be, I'd love for there to be some discovery
you
there because I don't.
Know.
Yeah.
You might have some strain of something you could not expect.
Sure.
But you're right. You've had a visual construct to bounce off of your whole life. And And as familiar as I am with my parents' faces, and as much as I think of them as my face too, in a lot of ways, you're right. It's not the same thing. So, yeah, so it took me a while to just take the plunge and do it. And when I got the results back, I was like, well, holy shit.
Oh, no. Wow.
So I am more Japanese than I am Korean.
Interesting.
And then I'm also a bit Chinese, which none of this was a surprise in the sense that there's so much crossover, particularly within Asian cultures. I think it's like, of course, there's going to be mixing and of course.
Yeah.
But I did not expect to be more Japanese.
Yeah. Did that change your – I mean, that's the kind of information where what do we do with that? Like, does it change the way we see ourselves in the mirror? Does it change nothing? Does it – you know what I mean? What?
Totally. That's exactly what I asked myself. I'm like, so – like, and then I realized I didn't really feel any different. I thought it was cool. I thought it was really neat. And in a – maybe far-fetched way, I was like, is that why Japanese has always sounded easier to my ear than Korean? I don't know.
But I of course you don't know.
Maybe.
But I do enjoy...
It's a fun speculation.
Because when I was in... this goes back to this kind of same old refrain that I feel like I come back to a lot, but it has to do with how unique I felt I needed to be as a younger person and vitally important it felt to me and how much I didn't want to, I think it's very common, know really much about my past and I still don't.
Sure.
I'm not the person who's like, well, my grandmother's grandmother. Was
sure. Some people
I don't have
love
that.
Some that
people
family
do.
Tree stuff. Yeah.
And thank God someone in my family does. My Aunt Maureen is very good about like tracking
great.
The genealogy.
It can
so,
be fascinating.
And it may become more interesting to me because I'm certainly more interested than I ever was.
Mm.
But I was so interested in being, you're so interested in being your own person mm-hmm. that I didn't have a real interest in like what was in my DNA or what my bones,
right.
you know, but I now sort of, you know, I like the idea that of course it could be completely metaphysical or so totally imagined or whatever, but like, I don't know. I mean, if you have a lot of Japanese DNA in you somehow, why isn't it possible that in the same way animals
sure.
have an instinctual
sure.
understanding to do something that we can't explain why they know how to do that behavior because it's very behavioral and not as – and it's not taught,
right.
but it's in there somewhere.
Yeah, it's not processed.
I mean, I don't know. Why not?
Maybe I heard more Japanese as a baby than I did Korean.
Sure.
I don't know.
And so not much at all is known about your birth parents?
Zero.
Wow.
Now, I will say this, and there's a whole movement devoted to this. It's become – much more public in the recent years, but international adoption, while often wonderful, is often really corrupt.
Mm.
I mean, not surprisingly,
sure.
you know, these organizations that go into other countries and set up shop, and that's basically what it is. It's commerce.
Right.
They're setting up shop. And sometimes those adoptions happen in a way that is completely unethical
yeah.
and just horrific to the home country of the child, for the birth parents. It's just, it could just be terrible.
Mm.
So, and some of this has come to light about adoption from Korea. But I personally don't know anything. I've tried to get details. I've tried contacting my adoption agency, both domestically and the branch in Korea, to be met with a pretty quick brick wall.
Right.
It's civil, but it's a brick wall.
Right.
And, you know, the things that I've learned in the past about how this information is actually kept leads me to think that there may be information that I just can't access. I may need to go, I think, and do like a dedicated time there to try to figure out some things.
Have you been there?
Oh, yeah. Two times. And it was great.
Yeah.
It's good. And I had no expectations. I didn't go thinking, oh, I'm going to set foot in Korea and be like, I'm home. You know,
yeah.
I wasn't.
Sure.
No,
but.
God, did I feel American when I was there.
Oh, gosh.
Oh,
I
my
bet.
God. I felt like a Clydesdale. I was just clomping around. You
yeah.
know, like Korean women, they come in all shapes and sizes, of course. But by and large, my impression was the feminine quality of so many Korean women. And I was just like, huh. You know, laughing really loud and, you know, sitting with my legs wide open.
You know, me too. My goodness,
like
do
that.
I have all those qualities. Yeah.
But I was actually, I felt really good about it. I was curious to see if I would feel like an alien there, and I did a little bit, but no more than I would feel in any other country where I didn't have a lot of context.
But was the expectation, and I ask this as, I mean, the only I don't know. There's still something innately racist about being a white person. I just want to acknowledge I'm uncomfortable with it, and I don't know what the answer is, because I can't not feel the way I feel, but I also I don't want to feel the way I feel, the way someone feels that black people are inferior. Like, I don't want to be like, this is just how I feel. But there feels something innately very racist about me being, about saying stuff like, well, that's so much more interesting. That seems different. That seems interesting.
Oh, no, but I don't think so.
Somehow to me, it feels like there's something very luxurious about being a white person saying like, this is so boring. And it's like, I'm attached to this group of people that, you know, in their own way have just been so brutal and awful and like, how embarrassing. And, you know, feels something like there's something luxurious about having white guilt, I guess.
Well, can you,
I don't know how to combat that, because
you should rejoice in the fact that now, at least in Los Angeles, you are the minority.
Certainly. Growing up when I was in Tucson, I was a minority. Right. I loved it.
Of course.
I loved it.
Right.
Love that I came equipped with a comfort level with being around a bunch of Hispanic people and not having, I'm not that way about other cultures. I don't have this like us versus them thready kind of thing.
Sure.
Because that's absolutely patently absurd, but it's very common for people who, whatever culture you grow up in, you have an unease about others if you haven't had a live exposure to you know, all different kinds.
Sure. And those are the moments when you pick your battles, right? Like, I've had so many. Well, because my last name is Polish, that has been the source of some interesting conversations.
I feel sure.
And because I look and am Asian, but have relatively little experience in what that means to grow up Asian American, because my parents weren't Asian. Yeah. So, like, my parents were always fully supportive of me becoming an artist, and I never experienced any of the pressure that sometimes comes along with having immigrant parents who want you, who push you
to take full advantage of all of the opportunities that are abundant here.
Makes sense.
Which totally makes sense.
And is great.
Absolutely.
And I would want the same. But
that wasn't your experience.
No, I had parents who were like, find something that you love so much that you do it for free. And
Well, that sounds like my dad for sure.
And anyway, isn't that what we're doing? Because I don't know about you. I have acted for free.
Most of it.
So many
times. That's correct.
So that worked out well. But that was the philosophy I grew up with.
Yeah. Okay. I just want to make sure I have like three different conversations I'm having with you in my head all at once.
Okay.
And I'm afraid I'll forget at least two of them. And I probably will. But the tangents I wanted to explore, and now I'm just putting the pressure on you. Mm-hmm. Like, now you have to remember all this.
Oh, no.
But I want to keep talking about you being there, because what brought this up for me was my only version of that, which is limited, is being in Scandinavia, which I think I have zero of in me. So everyone was always like, oh, you're Scandinavian. I'm like, no.
Because you're tall and blonde.
Because I'm tall and blonde and have blue eyes.
That's what they say to my husband, too.
When I was there, specifically like in Denmark or in Norway, everyone assumed I was Norwegian or Danish and just spoke the language to me,
God.
Which doesn't happen to me most foreign countries that I visit.
Right.
But everyone really, so even there they were like, you're not? And then they always like, then once you say I'm American, they speak better English than you do. They're like, fine. And then they speak
my
perfect
God.
English.
Yeah, it's amazing.
But that was the first experience I'd had where there was just this like universal assumption that I would speak the language. And so that's my question about you being in Korea. Is everyone just like, did people assume that you were Korean or spoke or Asian and spoke one of those languages? And were you surprised? Like, how did they react when you didn't, if that even happened?
I was worried about it. And I think I've heard a lot of other adoptees say this too, because most of us don't grow up speaking Korean.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have this real, I shouldn't speak for everyone. I have at times had this real inferiority complex about it, because there is oftentimes a sort of violent reaction, not just from the Korean community, I think probably from any ethnicity, but you don't speak the tongue of which you're from. And, and it feels like you've betrayed an entire country. My parents, bless their hearts, they tried. They put me in Korean language classes.
Oh, they did.
And I was in there for a little bit and I was like, I'm bored. I just want to get my hair spiral permed like everyone else.
Well, that's the toughest thing, right? Is that imposing that on a child is very different than when you kind of have a reason to be interested in it.
If it was being spoken at home. But dear God, I wish they had forced me, chained me to that chair, because I would love to speak any other language fluently.
Yeah.
I feel like an idiot for not being able to do it. But when I went to Korea, I was a little nervous because I didn't want to just constantly go around disappointing the population. But I think, Janet, I must have
They just knew that you weren't.
Projected so much American that they were like, eh, we won't even bother with. I don't know.
It's a blessing in disguise.
Yeah, no one, I don't really recall anyone actively trying to talk to me in Korean. And when they did, I would say my one little phrase that I knew, which was basically, I don't understand you. And they would very quickly either give up or speak English.
Yeah.
Now, this was in Seoul, where a lot of people do speak English. But yeah. Yeah, that language thing is so, so interesting to me in terms of how it can instantly bond people together. Mm-hmm. And I have never had that with any other Asian culture.
Mm-hmm.
So the closest I get is eating all the food.
I mean, listen, I'm right there with you.
Which that's really wonderful.
Now, let me ask you this. So how does the conversation with your parents, what was that like? You know, you're that particular, I mean, it seems like that could be a potentially sensitive issue. Sorry, guys.
Yeah.
A potentially sensitive issue, obviously. Like, how did they express that? And by the way, I would be remiss if I didn't say, because maybe some other people who are listening to this are thinking this, that only two episodes ago, my last boy of summer was Dana Gould, and he has three daughters, all adopted from China. So in my mind, this is just going, it's going around and around and around in my head. Because we talked about it only very little, but I've talked of it offline in life when I'm not on a podcast, which occasionally happens, though, that I think about that. But all of this stuff is going through my head. I'm thinking about, like, the things that he and his ex-wife, you know, the mother of those children, the stuff that they have gone through, and kind of what they, you know, trying to do everything right, and, you know, how much am I mean, it just seems like, because I have that sort of impetus, like, well, if I had adopted it and I could,
you want to be conscientious,
if I could bring some, you know, if I could help a child that wouldn't have the opportunities that I've had, wouldn't I do that? And there is that, there's just, like, it's so layered with
What
does that bring in with it? And what was that like for you and your parents?
Well, for me, being adopted was something that I never didn't know. I can't remember not knowing. Mm-hmm. It was celebrated. It was matter of fact. It was something I loved hearing the story of
over.
And, like, in the same way that maybe other kids, biological kids, love hearing about being in their mommy's tummy and how the birth was and all that, I loved hearing the story of how I was adopted. Mm-hmm. My poor mother. Oh, my God. She told it so many times. But to me, that was, I think, a really important anchor.
Sure.
And
that's your origin story, right? That's your fairy tale, in a sense.
And, you know, it's amazing what people, it's gotten a lot better. And I think living in Los Angeles, big city, it's much better. But growing up, my God, I answered so many of the same kinds of questions that were not ill meant, but, you know, do you ever want to find your real parents? That kind of shit.
Yeah.
Where you're like, you know, depending on what mood I was in, I would either be like, I know who my real parents are. Sure. They're the people who take me to my piano lessons and ground me. And, you know, what you're asking is, and then I would supply the biological term, and then they would go away, hopefully learning something. But a lot of the time, I would just be like, I don't want to have this conversation with you right now. But in terms of how I talked with my adoptive parents about it, it was always something that was really out in the open.
Mm-hmm.
I never had any interest of contacting birth family when I was younger, but I have no doubt that if I had, it would have been fully supported.
Sure.
And that's not always the case.
Absolutely.
Man, I've heard some just harrowing stories about people who have been disowned. I mean,
really sad.
Yeah, I don't understand. That's just cognitive dissonance to me. I don't get it.
I mean, there nothing other than fear. Like, there's literally no reason I can think of except for, wow, you really must doubt your relationship with your child.
Yeah.
In a way they probably don't doubt.
No.
For you to feel like that, those series of questions deserving answers has nothing to do with creating a bond that is somehow more impactful than the ones that they had with you.
And to think it's that you have ownership over any person's life, whether they came out of you or not, is an interesting thing to discover, because
absolutely.
Yeah. So I'm really grateful, because my growing up and my adoption was very healthy, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Enough as it could be. You know, I'm sure there are things that my parents would look back on and be like, ah, I wish we'd done blank.
Right.
But that's
also all normal. Parents feel that way. Yeah. And who's to say? I mean, I have, you know, friends who I like, it's so hard to say what are you going to get thrown, you know?
Yeah.
You certainly were thrown a very specific set of circumstances by virtue of what your parents chose and what happened to you and all of that kind of stuff. But, you know, so does somebody else whose mom gets cancer when they're 10.
Exactly.
Or, you know, who moves around a bunch because they're a military brat. Like, we all have our kind of, here's what I was faced with, and you know, this is how it made me turn out or whatever.
I think growing up adopted with this Polish last name has led to me, hopefully, really cutting out a lot of assumptions about anybody. Like, I don't assume a lot about anyone. I don't assume anything about someone because of their name. I don't assume anything about them because of what they look like, just because I am a walking example of being contrary to most assumptions.
Yeah. I think absolutely. So, and by the way, I'm proud to say that I really, like, if you had said, what do you think my story is? I would have been like, I have no idea whatsoever.
Sure.
Could be that one of your parents is Japanese or Korean or Chinese. Could be that neither of them are. Could be that both of them are. Like, but your mom remarried and your dad was Polish. Like, who knows? Yeah. You know?
Well, but that's cool. But that's on you because you're open-minded in that way. Whereas I do feel like a lot of people, just for safety, they want to put you in the slot as soon as they can so they know where you go.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
when that doesn't happen, it can be really unnerving. And that's when some of the interesting conversations happen, or the ones where you're like, I want to kill myself right now and I hate you.
Yeah.
So it tends to go one of two directions. Generally, for me, if a conversation starts out with someone saying, you speak really good English, that's when I'm like, oh my God. I'm out.
Oh, that's got to be the worst.
I'm out. Yeah.
Oh, wow. And that's amazing. It still amazing.
Happens. That shit still happens. I'm sorry to
laugh. It's just preposterous.
No, it's like...
Oh my God. Now, let's get back to your high school. I have to assume you're great at math and you play the violin.
Right. No, yes. Okay, so I'm embarrassed to say that one of those things was true.
Oh!
The violin one. I was not great at math, and I was not great at the violin. I was not great at it, ever. I had to work my ass off to be even okay.
Yeah. What made you choose that?
Well, originally...
Because I kind of always wish I had. Like, why didn't I choose guitar? I guess I know why I chose guitar. It was offered to me, but...
Okay, so when I was in grade school, I guess, there was this older kid, brother of a friend of mine, and he played the viola. And it, for whatever reason at that time, I thought he was just the coolest. I thought he was cool. Uh-huh. So I wanted to play the viola. However, when I was that small, they didn't make violas that small. Because then it's not a viola anymore.
Right.
So I was given the violin and was like, okay, this thing's screechy and horrible. Uh-huh. And
that's true. Nothing sounds like with a guitar, you can kind of somehow almost sound okay. There's no between.
There's no margin of error with the
violin. Point.
You either play it well or everyone wants you to go away.
That's right.
So, yeah. So I played the violin through middle school and that was it.
And that's like in an orchestra or a band or something. Yeah.
Not well.
Yeah.
Not well. I Paco Bell Cannon, that's about
I think I would have given it up really fast because I was a lazy child who felt really, really uncomfortable when I wasn't good at something right away.
I was
weak-minded and hated criticism and would be so easily hurt that if I picked up that violin and it made that screechy sound, I would be like, I hate myself! And throw it out the window.
Well, I guess I'm done.
You know?
Yeah, it was... And looking back, I'm not sure why I persisted because the rewards were not great. Again, I never reached the point where I was playing and was like, the tone. It was always just a hair's breadth away from killing someone. So I don't know why I kept going. I guess it was just something I did. And a friend of mine also did it. And
if there's a social element to it, I think that makes a huge difference as a young person.
I liked being in the orchestra. Mm-hmm. I had no desire for a solo career. I just liked playing with all those other people, which is why I eventually came back to acting as a thing because I realized I want to play with lots of other people.
Yeah.
Because I was a graphic designer in Boston and it was lovely, but often,
and this was in your early 20s or? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
But often really solitary.
Mm-hmm.
And I was getting really bored.
God, I can really relate to that.
Like creative, but static. I just sat in front of the computer all day. My ass just got bigger and bigger and I just got more and more unhappy, and I'm like, but I'm being creative. What's wrong?
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I realized it's the group thing. Mm-hmm. I just want to be one little piece of a giant mechanism that all is moving toward the same thing.
I love that.
That to me is super satisfying.
I love that.
And
yet, when you sort of look at, I mean, what you're to your point about liking to be an orchestra, you know, the sort of broken version of that being a school that's not really doing it for you, it probably is even more frustrating because if there's some deep yearning that you're not even identifying necessarily for what it is, to have that experience because you've because the mechanism is there and it's in place, but it's not working for you and it's broken. That seems like it would be so much harder to have that than to be a person who kind of didn't need that and was just off by themselves and never thought about it. Do you know what I mean?
Right. Or who liked the mechanism the way it was and needed the broken pieces because that was the way they could really fly. I mean, let's be honest. That's how some people in high school were, right?
That's true.
They could only be what they were because others were broken.
Well, I'm afraid you're right.
And those are the people I really never liked and avoided.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. I guess the mechanism of high school for me never really worked. And I had some great teachers. I had some fun experiences, but it was racist. I had a bully who was really racist to me. And for what reason, I do not know. Right. I mean, I never remember wronging him.
I'm sure you didn't.
But I
wonder
was,
if he knows, and I wonder if that's anything, it's something he's ever thought about since.
I wonder too, and I wish I could remember his name, quite frankly, because he's one of those people that you want to look up and secretly be like, oh, you're working at a, you know, or you want to be like, oh, you seem to have turned a corner.
Sure.
But yeah, I'm not sure. I guess I was an easy target because there weren't that many of us. And I must have looked like I was pretty happy in my life. Otherwise, why would he want to bring me down? I don't know.
Yeah.
But that sucked.
Yeah.
And then...
It's lucky that there are so many great Chicago songs about racism for you to just really sink right into. They really get me.
Yeah. God, 80s music. Like, I was thinking about it on the way over. I was listening to some in the car to try to remind myself of those times. And... man, Sting, it didn't even matter what he looked like, didn't it?
Yeah.
You could fall in love with him just based on what he sounded like.
I know,
like, right?
He really could.
God, that voice.
That's a good voice of the 80s. I would put Peter Gabriel up there, too, in that
same
category.
Same kind of thing.
Yeah.
Just evokes a whole nother level of your imagination.
Yeah. Were you, this is exactly where my mind went. I always bring it back to me. But I was thinking about those two, and then I was thinking about, like, always having, kind of holding a torch for those two, as I was, like, got real into sort of more, like, you know, goth or emo or whatever.
Sure.
We didn't call it emo back then, guys. But, like, The Cure and Depeche Mode and all that. And I was thinking, and then I started thinking, like, oh, I wonder if Joy, did you get into any kind of trouble in that? Like, did you do drugs or drink, or, like, did you have that experience in high school at all?
Did not. I was so nerdy. My friends and I would get together and play the piano and sing. That's what we did.
I think that's adorable.
Well, here's the thing. Like,
which, by the way, I also had friends I would do that with, even though, like, the next night I would drop acid and go to a club. So it was very, it was a real enigma.
You know what's funny, Jenna, is part of me always yearned to have an opportunity like that. Mm-hmm. But quite frankly, I was never presented with it.
Sure.
And I guess I could have been more active in seeking it out. It was certainly there. I mean, God, it was the Pacific Northwest.
There was
no lack of drugs.
Right.
But I, for whatever reason, just never found myself in its presence. I mean, I did other things. Like, I just never got caught. That was the thing.
Yep.
Like, my senior year of high school, I snuck out of the house pretty much every night to go spend the night at my then boyfriend's house, who didn't live with his parents.
Oh, my.
He had his house with his older brother.
Yeah.
So, but that was the extent. We'd get on his motorcycle. We'd go into the night.
Listen, that's pretty great.
But that was the extent.
A lot of people I know would have wanted to be able to do that and have that as seniors in high school.
Maybe that was satisfying enough for me. And
So,
you know. And my dear parents were so trusting that even when they would, like, discover the screen off the window, and my dad would just be like, "What's this doing here?" You know,
connecting any dots. That's
so
delightful.
Very, very trusting. But I just was good at not getting caught, I guess. But it was never really anything terribly illicit.
And you said there was no theater really for you, or you did theater, but it wasn't good.
I did a high school play where I had no lines. And I mostly did it because my best friend was really into theater and was a wonderful actor. And I just wanted to be able to hang out with her and stuff. But I was given the no lines part, which was just fine, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
I was not, because that wasn't on my radar at all.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I was a dancer.
Oh, well, there you go.
I played the piano.
Was it ballet was it?
Okay. Ballet and then modern, some Martha Graham stuff came in high school. And that was where I was naked on stage in that world.
Oh, that's fun.
But the acting thing, that was my friend's thing. And I didn't feel the need to be a part of it at all.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was a straight production of Les Mis. There was no singing. It was just words.
Oh, that's amazing. Dialogue. I think many people would argue that what makes that what it is probably the music. But
I know. Listen,
I got to get into this MASH game pretty soon. But if you think I'm going to gloss over you being naked on stage in high school during a dance production.
No, not literally.
I see.
Like,
I mean, this is really taking a bold turn.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't want anyone to see my knees, much less my entire body.
I wish I was that cool. Like, I look at someone like Tavi Gevinson now, and I'm like, dang, she is just effortlessly cool. She can't help it. She's one of those people, she just seemingly can't help it. I was so far removed from being effortlessly cool.
Uh-huh.
If I even came close, it was through so much manual effort that I couldn't enjoy it.
Right.
I never enjoyed those moments because I was so busy stressing out about how I got there, what I was going to do when I got there, and how I was going to make it last as long as possible, which it never did.
God,
it never
so
did.
Exhausting.
Oh.
Did you keep a journal?
Oh, I still have them.
You do?
They're
God, I need
horrific.
To start like a separate podcast just of being able to read some of that stuff because mm-hmm. That's a whole other... Like, I don't mind exercising my high school demons and all the things I'm embarrassed about who I am now. I choose not really to talk about. It's very easy to kind of go, well, we all can give ourselves a pass because this was a long time ago.
Right. Isn't that charming and awkward?
Yeah. Uh-huh. But like reading some of that stuff to anyone but myself, that's a whole other level of like, am I willing to go there?
Yeah. For me, when I look back on those journals, it's sheerly embarrassing because of the repetition. It's like I'm on a loop.
Sure.
It's just the same fucking thing over and over again, and it's not interesting.
Right, right, right.
But
is it just about boys or friends?
Yeah. Yes, parents, friends, just the trauma of being that particular age and with no perspective.
Uh-huh.
And it's colossally boring. I mean, I just wish I'd been more interesting. That's all.
Yeah.
I just wish I had had more of a point of view.
Yeah.
And less of a just what was right in front of my nose at that time that seemed like the be all and end all of the world. Yeah. I had no awareness in a broader sense.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
None.
What brought you to Boston?
I went there after college because I got a job.
Mm-hmm.
And my then boyfriend, who would then become my first husband, was from there.
Okay. So when did you guys get married?
1997.
Which I don't mean to say like when in that way necessarily, but like how, like in terms of your age or your kind of where, like, were you, how ready were you and what prompted that experience? And
I was a worldly 21 when I got married.
Mm-hmm.
And I
how
was
long
thinking
had you guys
about
been
this too. Oh God. So, through college.
Yeah, so it's not like it was someone you met. It wasn't that kind of marriage where you're like, I met him, we're doing it.
No, it wasn't. Although, you know, for so much of my life, I pushed everything to go faster. I just wanted everything. I wanted to speed through everything.
Well, God, yeah. I mean, I guess that reminds me that we never really, I guess there's not that much more to say about you deciding to take college classes or to just sort of get out of the high school environment.
But yeah, that was part
but
of
yeah.
it. Like, I started to read really young.
Because it's interesting,
young.
Because, yeah.
Like, everything just... I don't know why everything started young for me. And then that momentum pushed me into my first marriage, which at the time felt completely normal to get married after I graduated college when I was 20, got married when I was 21. And that just seemed like the natural trajectory
mm-hmm.
for someone who was racing so hard to go so fast. For what?
Hmm.
Why was I trying to move so fast?
Yeah.
Because now all I want to do is slow the fuck down. I just want everything to calm down.
Yeah.
Can we not move so quickly through time?
Yeah, yeah.
So what was my rush? I don't know.
It's interesting. Well, especially, I mean, it's interesting because those things, what am I trying to say? As I am now trying to psychoanalyze you in the most casual way.
Please do it.
No, I'm just wondering, like, because a lot of what you talk about is sort of like, I'm really turning this into like a synopsis that probably isn't accurate. But some of the stuff that you said has been so like, well, I just accepted that because that's all I knew or that's what I understood.
Mm.
And that's just what I thought I should do. Or I was in violin, you know, I played violin for this reason. There wasn't really a lot of thought behind it, that kind of stuff. But I counter that with my own experience, which I'm sure I've said this before, when people have said as younger people that they made bold choices, which I would consider not going to your senior year and trying to move faster to be a bolder choice. So it's interesting to me that, you know, in some ways you felt so unformed, but there's something so specific and defined about your eagerness to be formed that it's still very ambitious. You know what I mean? Because I wasn't ambitious like that. I was lost, but I also felt like I had no choice but to stay lost for however long high school lasts. You know what I mean? I never explored, maybe I could get out of here early, or maybe this, or maybe that. Do you know what I mean?
I appreciate and like that take on it, because that definitely feels more proactive than just sort of being in a constant mode of panic when you're young. Mm-hmm. But you're right. I guess there was an element of that, and that's something that as I've gotten older, I've come to recognize about myself slowly over time, is that I am, when I need to be, good at finding a different way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like if it isn't working, and sometimes it can take years.
Sure.
And sometimes it needs to take years. But when I finally get that ray of clarity, I cannot ignore it.
Mm-hmm.
For better or for worse, I have to act on it pretty fast. I don't see the point of waiting.
Yep.
Which may not lead to the best outcome sometimes emotionally for other people who I'm involved with in relationships. And I get that. Mm-hmm. But I can't hold on to something once I have come to understand it to be true. I can't push it away or tamp it down.
Yeah.
It's there. It's glaring at me, and I have to act on it. So maybe, that's true. And I think, like I said, when I was that young, even though I thought I was functioning with full autonomy, I was like, this is what I want to do.
Right.
Is get married now.
Right.
I wasn't like, maybe.
Yeah. And it also wasn't like, oh, he's pressuring me and I don't know how to do that. You know what I mean? That's a whole different story. You know,
totally. There was no outstanding circumstance that made it important. There was nothing, but I was like, I'm so savvy that I'm going to get married now. And I don't regret it at all.
How long were you guys married?
10 years.
Well, listen, that's not anything to sneeze at.
No. And it was a really great 10 years in many, many ways.
Yeah.
And then I think, like a lot of people do, we just kind of went, you know, we just bifurcated. And I think that was an instance of me realizing something without him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really what made it hard.
Yeah.
Of course.
Sure.
Of course, because I've definitely been in that position too, where you're like, where someone suddenly starts waving this banner with information about your personal relationship, and you're like, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And now you're telling everybody?
Yeah,
so
that's
think that's
hard.
What that felt like, having been on that side of it. But and then after 10 years in a marriage, it's, you know, because like anything else, it's habitual.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you get used to certain things. Your partner gets used to certain things.
Yeah.
You take things for granted.
Yep.
And
some of that can be wonderful. I mean, that's the stuff I always go. I mean, we could have a whole other hour conversation about the construct of marriage or just of long-term partnership.
Mm.
But, you know, a part of that, I think, is like ultimately in its best form, like a really wonderful thing that you need that to stay together with
it's
someone, like to get you through
consistent.
Times when you would otherwise give up, especially and as a young person. Again, I can't imagine maintaining a relationship for 10 years, much less 3 years when I was that age.
Me either.
But
I don't know.
But there it was.
Oh God.
But you know, as you get older, it's just like those sort of things that you come, you know, it's so funny because we all have this like really, I was thinking about this the other day. All of the different dichotomies, like the hypocrisies inside of what we espouse as like great stuff. It's like we're sad when a marriage breaks up, but then we're happy. Like there's something really confusing about it because we all like there's this romance is beautiful, but it's not less. It's not more or less sad or more or less happy than someone figuring out that they can't be with the person that they're with either. You know what I'm saying? So it's like,
yes.
I want to be just as happy for somebody who a couple stays together and it's this old couple and they love each other so much and they're best friends and they've done everything together that when one dies, the other one dies because their heart is broken. Like, we all sort of love those stories, but I also want to not feel bad. You know, I don't want to feel like if someone in their 80s gets divorced, I don't want to be like, that is a shame.
Right.
Or someone, you know, it's like, why is it a shame?
Because frankly, having been divorced now, I've come to understand if someone tells you they're getting a divorce, you say congratulations.
Yeah.
Because often they deserve it. And,
yeah.
And it may be hard for them right now and their partner, they may be having a really hard time, but ultimately there's a reason why it's happening,
right.
And it's probably going to make both people happier.
And whatever it was, I mean, some marriages are like this and some marriages aren't, but I just had this idea. I'm sure I'm not the first person to think this, particularly since I just thought of it off the cuff, which means almost certainly I've heard it somewhere like 10 times. And now I'm like, I just had an original thought, everybody.
But take credit.
But I'm going to go ahead and take it.
Yeah.
No, but like, it's almost like, you know, in your case, you know, to be 31, and to decide that your 10-year marriage needed to be over, especially at that age, to me, that's like, I graduated my marriage, everyone. Do you know what I mean? It's like, congratulations,
no.
You graduated. You got your degree in marriage.
You
were married.
Yeah.
You had that experience.
It was
and
like med
now
school.
You're not, you know? Like,
yeah.
that was an experience that you had. You graduated.
I
Instead
think you're
of,
right.
You know, and I'm not saying that that means everyone needs to graduate out of their marriage,
no,
but
sure.
In some cases, that's really what it is.
I think you're right. And dear God, from when you're 20 to 30, I don't know for you, it's a giant decade.
It's I can't
a huge
even
decade.
Begin to. Take to tease that apart and imagine the consistency of one relationship. I can't. When I think about the people that I was drawn to,
oh God,
and the relationships that I had throughout that decade
versus now,
you would never believe that those, like, you would never think that those people had a girlfriend in common.
No,
do
you're
you know
right.
what I mean?
I mean, there are certain fundamental things about ourselves that I'm sure were true then that are true now.
Sure. But my taste or what I needed to see reflected back
God.
Or what I was searching for, that was vastly
my
different
level of
from
tolerance
your,
alone
right.
is much more, I'd like to think, much more highly developed now.
And hopefully my, then. but I'm also hoping that my tolerability has improved as
oh,
I've
God,
gotten
that's
older.
A good point.
I can't
yes. Can
imagine
people handle
being
me?
In a relationship with myself, much less 10, 15, 20 years ago. As
oh,
a teenager.
I see that with myself now. Corey's one of the most patient men I know. And my ex-husband was one of the most patient men I know. And I'm seeing the trend here because I apparently, my dad is one of the It's true. I require patient men. But that's okay. I've learned to accept that
okay.
about myself.
It's absolutely okay.
Yeah. But yeah, well, you know, I mean, my mom died when I was 30. And that was really what triggered a whole fundamental
oh, sure.
yanking of the cosmic tablecloth.
Sure,
that
sure.
really triggered a lot. And for that, I will be forever grateful.
Yeah.
Because without it, I don't know.
Yeah.
Would I have ever been like, oh my God, this is my life.
Yeah.
I can see it. It's a long, narrow road and there's no outlets. And that terrified me.
Yeah.
And it was a lot like what I think I saw her life being.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, wow, if there's any legacy that my mom would want to leave, I think it would be for me to be happy. And if I need to make some big changes to do that, do them.
Yeah.
Make them.
I think that's gorgeous.
I think that's, I do believe she would have wanted me to be happy
yeah.
no matter what that meant. So
absolutely.
Yeah. Took me a while to figure that one out. But like I was on autopilot for the first year after her death. I was on the loop. Oh my God. That was going into the second season of that show. And I was like this. I was just like robotic. I was like, I have to go be on TV now. Like I had a really hard time. I was grateful for it, though.
Well, that's part of what... I mean, I'm sure most people who lose someone or have a major upset in their life in some way that makes it traumatic, even sometimes when it's big in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
But there are certain jobs that I think it's harder to connect with in terms of their importance than show business. You know
yeah.
what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. You know, maybe as a teacher, you know, engaging children and shaping our future in a very literal way.
Right.
Maybe that feels meaningless also. Maybe being a doctor feels meaningless if you've just lost your mom. I don't know. I can't speak to that. But
yeah.
I do know that it is difficult to sit in a makeup chair for 90 to 2 hours
mm-hmm.
when all you can think is this is the most meaningless tacky,
yeah, it
superficial
does.
Thing I could possibly be yeah. doing
and
with what I'm feeling
on
inside.
A yeah. yeah. Which, though, maybe that's the savior aspect of yeah. it, is you're putting on a costume. Yeah. You get to be someone else for however many hours of the day.
Yeah.
And psychologically push aside the things that you're not ready to deal with.
Yeah.
And then face them when you are. I don't know. Yeah. I was so new to the business, too, at that point, that I didn't know if I was coming or going, frankly. Yeah. So maybe it was good that all happened at once. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what I would do now if that happened. I might be like, bye. I'm going to Bali. See y'all later.
Sure,
you
sure.
know? I'd be like, I'm out.
Yeah.
But then I was just like, I have a job to do.
Right.
I lost my mother, but yeah. I have to show up at work, so I'll do that. You know, I don't
well,
know.
It happened the way it did.
It did. It did.
I mean, you seem really great now.
You know, I have moments of
how long ago
great.
Did we meet? We were both new.
Yes, because On the Lot happened.
I mean, it might have been my second summer in Los
yeah,
Angeles.
Yeah, it wasn't that it long
was,
after.
Yeah.
It was not that long after The Loop, because maybe 2000, I want to say 2007 or 8, mm-hmm. even, maybe 2007.
Might have even been 2007. Maybe even earlier than that. I'm
it
not
might
even
have
kidding.
Been.
I don't. I just remember, again, it was that sort of like, I don't really know how this all works. Even even though I had been here maybe a year or two.
I was happy to be there.
Yeah.
My ignorance was bliss, mm-hmm. truly. Mm-hmm. Before I knew you could get fired after a table read, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I was just really happy to be there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just try to keep connecting with that. Even burdened with the information we have.
Oh, God.
Joy, I could talk to you for 1,000 years. I got to get into this MASH game, which okay. I'm also excited about. I'm going to go with... I'm going to go right into the neighborhood of make-believe, not in a Mr. Rogers way, even though I probably
I like
owe him
there.
And his legacy money for using that term. three places that are not real, but that it would be really fun to be able to jump into, be it from film or a book or television.
Narnia.
Wonderful. One.
I mean, every closet door leads there, right?
I certainly hope so. Have to assume so.
I lived heavily in the world of Anne of Green Gables.
Well, Joy.
And I would want to listen. Experience all of those things.
Now, listen, it's been
Island.
A while since we did a major obsession with Anne of Green Gables. That came on earlier in the podcast. For some reason, I had like 8 guests in a row-ish.
Really? Who were obsessed with...
And I was too. And so I've certainly talked about it ad nauseum. But... I do feel it's been a while, so let's just get right back into it briefly.
Oh my God.
Have you been to PEI? Because
no,
I still haven't gone.
I haven't.
I'm kind of afraid to, yet it feels like the most important thing in the world, and it's felt like that since I was like 8.
Yes, I understand. Like, you don't want to tarnish any of the gloss that lives on PE Island because of those books.
But then when I talk to people, they're like, it kind of is exactly
is
that.
Magical?
Yeah.
Well,
or at least,
I've heard.
I don't know, who am I talking to? Am I talking to like us, like kindred spirits? I don't know. Am I just kindred talking to Canadians spirits. Who were like, it's really pretty? But,
yeah,
you know,
I feel like Canadians are like, oh, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
But kindred spirits.
I need the white way of delight. Like, I need the, you know what I mean? I need, because that is the, I
the
still
white
have
way
that.
Of delight.
But I
never
still have that
me,
relationship
how?
To being outside, I think. Like, I still have that.
I think if you grow up in a place where nature is prevalent, like a big part of your childhood, then I do think that resonates with you in a different way. I mean, just the way that Ella Montgomery would describe light and smells and sounds in the trees, and that was all something that I was really present for me as a kid.
Yeah.
So it was not hard to imagine it in this other magical place, you know, really far north and east.
Yeah.
But, oh God, you know, just the idea, again, I think of being an outsider. You know, that was her appeal, right?
Yeah.
She was plunked. She was an orphan. She was plunked down in this setting.
Oh, God, absolutely. No,
you know,
I'm sure you could really relate to that.
I want red hair. You know, I mean.
I know. So did I. And I didn't. I was not adopted. Although, when you were talking about the idea of being, like, having that origin story that is a sort of lullaby, I was such a fucked up child because of, for whatever reasons, and my parents divorced, and when it happened, all that. Oh, like, my obsession was, I hope my mom isn't my real mom, which I still hold on to guilt about.
So many kids,
you know
though,
what I mean?
Want to be adopted.
Yeah, I did not want to, like, I remember, like, like screaming at her, like, I know you're not my mom. You know
right.
what I mean? Like,
ugh. Which, no, but
imagine
I mean.
Imagine being a mother and hearing that.
Oh,
how do
well.
You get past that? As a child, you're just like a crazy child. And you, that's
I don't
the reason,
know.
Like, as an adult, hearing that and, like, having to filter that through all the other emotions you're feeling about your marriage ending and all that stuff, like, God bless her. I don't know how she got through that.
I can only think that at some point she might have wished that herself with her mother. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a good
point. And all the things that you get that you hear as an adopted kid from people who aren't adopted, the mystique of not being biologically related to your parents, you want to be like, yeah, but I have so many friends who feel like aliens in their family or who wonder, I came from there.
Yeah, so absolutely. Absolutely.
It's taught me that the bloodline thing, it's as important as you make it, and otherwise it's not at all.
Yeah.
Well said. I've never felt.
God, I really went off on that serious Anne of Green Gables.
Okay, but no, but that's what
happened.
Okay.
Anne of Green Gables, good luck with your third life. One. How are you going to top Anne of Green Gables?
You're not. Yeah, that's hard. A place I've always wished I could go that is imaginary.
I like the idea that you would just do that for each category I give you.
As you think about it, you repeat to yourself what the category is. So no one forgets what you're thinking about.
Right. It's also so I don't forget.
My goldfish attentions. I think, you know, the Muppets. I would want to be in that world.
God, great, great, great.
Specifically up in the box with those grumpy old men. Because they had all the power.
Yeah.
They could just sit up there and piss on people. And no one would, you know, and that's what we all secretly want to be able to do at some
point.
Right?
I love it.
Like there were no penalties for them.
Yeah.
They got the last word, literally.
They really got the last word.
And, oh, yeah.
They really laughed at each other and themselves.
Yeah, that's it. That could be a fun place to live. Yeah.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Let's do three types of transportation that are somehow unique or different than just the standard sort of getting around in a car. I mean, I'll accept the basics of, like, I wish I could ride a bike at super speed but be safe, or even just that you could walk really fast, or you can get real crazy and, like, give me some imaginary, like, teleportation, rocket ship kind of stuff if you want.
Oh, you know what? I've never had real big transportation fantasies, because to me, like, I was a kid who grew up drawing Corvettes and Transams.
Amazing.
Like,
That case, I will go straight up retro mash and say three cars you wish you could drive, because that is a perennial old school mash classic. Let's just shift over.
I've always loved old cars. I'm obsessed with the International Scout.
Okay.
I am obsessed with it. I have pictures of it on my phone.
I don't even know what it is.
I look at them. It's from the world of, like, you know, the Broncos, those old Broncos.
Oh, yeah. Like, or like a Toyota Land Rover, old school, something like that.
Much cooler.
Maybe
though.
I've seen one. Okay, you'll have to show me a picture.
There's models that have bench seats. There were scouts that you could have, like, five different ways depending on what kind of, like, back bonnet part you wanted versus the convertible versus. I there's something about it that appeals to me so profoundly.
I love it.
And then I remember really wanting a Miata.
Sure. Oh, that was, like, definitely a thing to
want. You know, before I realized, if you put any pressure on it, it would collapse. Like, those cars are so unsafe.
Now, should I create in this MASH world a safe Miata for you?
Yeah.
Like, all the good and none of the bad of the Miata?
A
Wonderful.
Miata that could go through a wall.
There you go. A Miata tank. Sure.
I want that.
Okay, number three.
Okay. In my dreams, I have the dream, like a lot of people do, where when you're trying to escape something, you rise into the air.
Yes.
I don't fly. I run in the air.
Oh, I love that. Air
and
running.
I've always thought that actually would be really satisfying. Depending,
absolutely.
The faster you run, then you just naturally lift off.
Yes.
And you just have to maintain a certain speed. You don't have to be going, like, full tilt sprint, but you just have to keep the legs turning.
Yeah.
And then you can just rise or fall depending on how fast you're running in the air.
I love everything about it.
But isn't that so, like, stereotypically Asian? Yeah, but you got to work for it. you have to work in the air.
Like, I have a lot of dreams of, like, it's more bounding and leaping and sort of. I have dreams where I sort of touch the ground, but then I'm running in the air for a while, and then I briefly have to touch down to bounce back up and run in the air.
Much more so
than, like, I'm gliding with, like, facing down.
Never had that.
I think it's almost like I get motion sick if I'm on my stomach in the air somehow.
Your subconscious knows.
Yeah, it doesn't necessarily appeal to me.
In your dreams.
I think maybe there's something about that. I love that. I love this combination of these three things. Look, I'm going to get this right out of the way. All due respect to your wonderful husband, Corey.
Yes.
This is a MASH game. I need three gentlemen. Could be, you know, Kevin Costner in the Bull Durham era. I don't know why I pulled him out, and I really had to think of a reason why.
That's a good era.
It is a good era.
Well, he was hot. I used to have a picture of him in my bedroom.
Well,
wall.
How did I know that? I've never brought up Kevin Costner as an example for anyone.
Oh yeah, I used there was some spread of guys in like Life magazine or something, mm-hmm. and Dennis Quaid was one of them.
Sure,
Ooh.
There's another one.
But okay, the sad thing is, the second you said no disrespect to your husband, I was like, oh, she's gonna want me to name, and I instantly was like, I was like, Idris Elba.
Oh well, yes, I mean that's
who.
Everybody gets a pass.
Just had to
yourself,
fan myself.
I know, I know.
That man is extremely appetizing.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, Idris Elba's hot. Clive Owen, I've always found Clive Owen.
That was
to
my,
be,
it's
like,
so funny. I was
super hot.
About to say him. I was about to say, yeah, you know, he has that sort of like smoldering Clive Owen quality.
Mm.
And there he is, second on your list.
Oh my God, he is just
Have you watched
fantastic.
The Nick?
No, not yet. Is he fantastic?
Get on it.
That's great because I've run out of shows.
It's so good. Now, he's not, you know, rakish in that. He's a mess.
Right.
But great. That movie is so, I mean, the movie, it is like a movie. Every single episode is like a small Steven Soderbergh movie.
Like, it's gnaw on his chin.
It's amazing.
He's great. Fabulous.
Yeah. Yeah.
I will watch because I'm a big fan of his. From the time when he was kind of an unknown and was doing those short film commercials for what car company was it? And he was this driver, you know, one of those stoic, doesn't talk a lot, but smolders.
Yes, yes.
Whew. Yeah.
Yeah.
Long time Clive Owen. Okay.
Got it. And
third
agree.
One? Who am I always like, oh, interesting.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because I feel like this used to be so much easier for me to do back in like the teen phase where your idols were so present and New Kids on the Block, it was like, yeah, all of them. I want all of them. But now I feel like I have a much harder time. And frankly, what I'm attracted to is so, so different.
Yeah.
You know? Oh my God, Jenna, I don't know. I might have to come back to it and really think on it.
Yeah, you really had these two right up top, and I'm trying to think of who else I would put
frankly,
in this category.
Because frankly, not like Stephen Colbert.
Uh-huh. No, but I mean,
very attractive.
Yeah.
Hilarious.
Yeah.
I would totally spend time with him.
Well, let's just put that in there. I mean, I think that's
But you
that's
know what I mean?
That,
like, that's how it's changed
yeah,
for me.
Yeah, absolutely. Same.
Where, you know, the days where women are being like, oh, Bill Clinton, I can see why. And I was like, what are you nuts? Uh-huh. But I kind of get that.
Yeah.
Not him, but I get why.
Yeah. Charisma has, charisma really starts
charisma.
To like.
Yes.
Yeah. Although I guess now speaking of early starters, these guys know, but like, I think it was charisma for me way earlier. Like I had no time for New Kids on the Block because I was, you know, obsessed with like Kevin Klein.
Oh, Kevin
And his
Klein.
Handsome mustache.
He's fantastic.
Yeah, what a wonderful.
Oh,
God. He's the best.
He is amazing.
But I can't oust Stephen Colbert because that's a really good too.
Yeah,
another classic for me, three food types, as general or as specific as you want to get, that have no bad ramifications on your body or mind. So in perpetuity, can be like at the snap of a finger, can be like this one thing you had once that you wish you could have all the time with no consequences, or can just be like pizza.
I could live off of the potato if it that was an option. If it suddenly was given all the health recommendations,
yes,
I would live
in
happily,
this world that has
happily off the potato in any form. Doesn't matter. Baked,
potato
fried,
in all forms.
So
love it.
Hash brown. I don't care. I love the potato. And I was really excited recently when it was revealed that it contains what? Iron? No, I don't know. Some nutrient which sold it.
When we were growing up, potatoes were important.
Yeah. They
no one said stay
hearty.
Away from potatoes.
No. And since when are potatoes the demon? Something has to be demonized in food. Otherwise, someone won't make money.
I know.
So they're the poor potato. But yes, the potato. I actually love Korean food.
Mm-hmm.
I love how spicy it is.
Mm-hmm.
I love that it's like getting slapped sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
it's bracing. Like you don't, and I love that like with a lot of other cultures that aren't American, you got to take your time with that shit. You know
sure.
what I mean?
That's
Korean
a good point.
Food comes out and you're meant, now you inhale it very quickly because it's delicious, but you're meant to linger.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's something culturally that I often yearn for.
Yeah.
I love after a dinner. Being like, oh my God.
Yeah, yeah.
It's been 5 hours.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Mm.
I would say that in solidarity with you in terms of the sort of like, what is the comfort food version of different cultures? Mm-hmm. If you think of it as a sort of stew, soupy mm-hmm. component, whatever that is, mm-hmm. bibimbap to me is like, oh, they nailed it.
Yeah. Cause you just get to
like, that's everything. Yeah. You could,
right. All the flavors.
So good.
Like poke is that way.
I'm yeah. Poke being that version. Poke. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything that's sort of, you're right. Like a melange
and
of
spicy,
things.
Yeah. You know,
all these sensations.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like it's an adventure to eat it.
Absolutely.
It's like it has a narrative.
Like you went on vacation in a food.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love
yeah.
it. I couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
I couldn't agree more. Okay. Potatoes, Korean food.
Potatoes, Korean food. And then I really love, okay, this is weird. I maybe someone else has experienced this. If I eat peanut butter,
yeah,
I must then have cheese.
Oh, interesting. That's first of all, I don't think that's weird, because if you go to the store, you can buy cheddar crackers with peanut butter in them. So it's not like it's out of control, not true. You know what I mean? I just looked the other day longingly at a box of peanuts themed, I mean, Charlie Brown, peanuts themed crackers of some sort that were like these small cheddar cheese circular crackers with peanut butter center. And
I was like,
if I could still have gluten, that's what I would do. Like, that's what I would eat. I would get those sandwich crackers.
For validating that, because I've never, of course that exists and that's a thing. Yeah. But it's like a primitive thing, and it's something that I'm always slightly like furtive about, because I just feel like, why do I need it?
But I mean, you know, when you think about it, it's like you would get like an appetizer tray. Like if you were at a party, there would be like nuts on the same plate as cheese. It would be like nut and cheese platter. But once you put it into a butter form, for some reason, it feels like it's not the same. But I think it totally makes sense.
Thank you. You're right.
They complement each other. Peanut butters and cheeses. Amazing. Okay. Next one is let's do. I do always enjoy this one. It's been a while since I've done it, but let's do like types of dress that for whatever reason you would not walk around with, but in this alternate MASH world, whatever it is you're interested in is also comfortable. So, you know, you could pick something that you sort of be like, God, I would love to see what it would be like to be fabulous in blank, but I would never do that because I'm way too interested in being comfortable. In this world, everything is of the same comfort level.
Okay, so and I it don't can be have from to any era. Lack so, of breath. Yeah,
so there's no, you can breathe, you can dress as a man, you can wear a beautiful kimonos everywhere, which is what I would do. Yeah, anything like that that's like, no one looks askance at you. You get to try it on.
I have always thought the hoop skirt is intriguing.
Love it.
Mostly because I grew up dancing in the Nutcracker, and that character, Mother Gigogne, I think she's called different things, but has that enormous skirt where all the children come out from under.
Yeah.
That's probably a psychological skirt. But anyway, I'm not going to think about that. I like the idea. What would I keep under there?
Amazing.
A whole population. Uh-huh. But I think maybe because what interested me about it always was the fact that the rest of the outfit was so binding, right? Like women could not breathe in the rest of it, but underneath they could do anything they wanted.
That's a great point.
It was like the first subversive wardrobe in a way, because God knows what was going on underneath the skirt.
That's a really good point.
Above
or who
it,
was under
was
there
like,
to your point.
Yeah. But underneath.
I think that's
fascinating.
You could
have a mini fridge under there and no one would know.
I think that's fascinating. It's such a good point.
So that's always been kind of interesting
to me.
Let's
get you into that hoop skirt.
And taking up that much space, too.
That's true, too.
As a woman, you know? There's no denying she has got a perimeter.
That's right.
You know, and I guess culturally, right, like that was an accessibility thing, too, right? Like you couldn't have a man.
God, I would love to. I would take a college class that you teach on the hoop skirt. I really would. I've never thought about it in any of these terms, and suddenly it feels like the most important thing in life.
Well, it's fascinating, isn't it? I mean, that kind of dress and the levels of it and the layers of it.
Yeah. It's a piece of machinery.
Yes.
Yeah.
And like when you watch that great, what's that great movie about Marie Antoinette? Was it called Marie Antoinette? Where they
Depends
had that
of the
great, that anachronism of the Converse and all that. Like, I love that shit.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, that movie, it was the only reason to see that movie really was the clothing.
Yeah. It's very conceptual, visual sort of
gorgeous.
Eating.
Yeah. The food and the clothing and the level of detail. Okay. So the hoop skirt.
Great.
I would and do and have worn men's clothing and dig it.
Yes.
Growing up, I went in my dad's closet constantly. Yes, thank God he wasn't a huge man, or it would have been ridiculous.
But I mean, my dad was fairly larger than me, and I still would wear like his flannel shirt. Well, it was
flannel shirts.
That was very convenient in the '90s.
No, but yeah, that was our jam was flannel shirts, and I wore men's pants, and I was like, the baggier the better.
Yes,
and I had no desire to flaunt my body in any way, and I don't think I was hiding because I wore cute jeans and pegged my cuffs and whatever. Yeah. But I loved wearing men's clothing because it was so freaking comfortable.
Yeah, me too.
And I love nowadays that this has become just part of what we wear as fashion as women. Men's clothing.
Yeah.
Or like the influence thereof.
Yeah.
Like to see a woman in a tuxedo is like no big deal, or to see women wearing men's styled shoes, no big deal.
Yeah.
So yeah, men's clothing.
That's great.
Is fantastic.
Great.
And then quite frankly, it would be fantastic not to wear any clothes at all.
Great.
If I could walk around, it would not cause any issues.
Just like you did on that stage in high school. Nope, nope, Janet, nope. You were misremembering that.
Actually,
you have turned it into a memory.
Let's insert that. That makes me so much more interesting in high school than I was.
You were naked as a dancer in high school.
Yeah.
Okay, I do have three more categories. I'm going to move through them quickly.
Okay.
Next one is a person who's not here, whether you knew them or not, that you can have these sort of conversations with, almost like psychically. It's not even like you pick up a phone. It's just like you sort of reach out and are like, hey, Oprah, but the Oprah's still around. So this is like, this would be like three different people from throughout history, someone personal, anything like that, that you can have a kind of meaningful dialogue with, in this sort of interesting way.
Okay, this is a great question. And it makes the first person I thought of was someone that I wish I could have meaningful dialogue with, only because he's so incredible, and that is Einstein.
Sure.
Because the idea of being able to talk to Einstein about something mundane.
No, I agree.
I'm so delightful.
Absolutely. I'm fascinated with the idea of having just like playful personal relationships with people that the more time goes by and the more legendary they become, the harder it is to connect with, like, and
because
see someone that you can still imagine a goofiness to and, like, imagine what he loved having as, like, a treat or something like that.
Because he's been a meme for longer than probably he was alive.
Absolutely.
It's so fun to imagine anyone like that who has so much cultural significance to just be like, dude, what'd you get at the grocery store?
Yes, I love that.
And for him to be like, oh, I waited in line behind the woman who was paying with a check and it was a pain. But yeah, so someone like that, this is getting deep. I would love to think that I could have a conversation with one of my birth parents like that.
Yep.
Like just like because, you know, there's things about you that you're like, where does that come from?
Yep.
And I can see hereditary wise.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I'm so much like my adoptive parents in a lot of ways.
Yes.
But there's many things that I'm like, who's that from?
Yeah.
Is that just me? Maybe it's just me. Or did I get that from someone?
Well, yeah, that's a question that, you know, I think many of us could ask that don't, because it could be even something that makes us different from our parents, but we don't go that extra step. But if you're an adopted child, I think that step is intrinsically built in on a way more literal level where you really are like, listen, I don't know. I can't call my aunt and say, did you always love, you know, square dancing?
Right. Like, it always came up with medical history. Whenever I would fill out a form and I'd be like, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's like stuff like that. Yeah. So, yeah, I like to think that I could have some sort of cool psychic connection with someone that I came from, but I don't know. And then I would love to, I feel like I'm changing what you asked me.
I don't care at all.
Okay. I think it would be fascinating to talk to Mary Baker Eddy.
Okay, great.
I grew up in Christian Science, and I don't practice it now and have not for many, many, many years.
God, I can't believe we didn't even get there.
Oh, God. Oh, God. I'm glad because we could have spent. And anyway, but I've gone so far away from any sort of organized religion, and happily so.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a lot of questions I have for her. Maybe in the same way that a lot of people want to talk to any religious figure.
Oh, my God.
You know,
if I could be a fly on the wall and actually see what this crazy Joseph Smith was like, given that I was exposed to that as a young person.
Fascinating.
Just to have all those, like to have that mystery actually solved. Oh, it'd be so...
satisfying.
So smug.
Right? Yeah. I mean, that's ultimately, I think, it's what I would go into it with, is a sense of smugness, and, which would probably be not great, but yeah.
My worst fear is I would walk away going like, actually, I think he was a prophet.
He was onto something.
Yeah.
He was real. I just was blind. Yeah. Blind to it. No, you're right. That's a possibility.
No, that's great. That's a great one. Yeah. Okay. Next category is, let's go with three weird pets that you can't ever actually have as a pet that would be fun to have.
Oh, I think it would be really cool to own a dolphin, but you know, you can't own a dolphin.
But in this world, the dolphin, it has chosen you.
Because wouldn't that be like living with something that was so much smarter than you constantly?
I mean, I hope so.
It'd be like looking at a spirit.
Yeah.
You know, like some sort of mythical creature.
Yeah.
Like a narwhal, which, how does that exist in nature?
I know.
That's
a
thing.
I know.
Every time I see a photo of it, I'm like, that's not a photo
of
a creature. That's a drawing of a creature.
I feel the same.
So I'd also want a narwhal.
Yeah, let's get that in there right away.
Oh my God. Those things are insane. And then I think it'd be really cool to have a massive bird of prey. Because you could just be like, go kill that for any reason.
Yeah.
Go kill that. I'm hungry. Yeah. Go kill that. I don't like that person. Go snatch that person's scalp off the top of their head and fly away with it. But yeah,
great.
Like a massive bird of prey.
Great, great, great. Okay. Yeah. Amazing and dark. and final category is, I did this one, I think I've done this one a couple of times. It's a very new one that a listener recommended to me, but I really like it. And it's one of those things that you'll either connect with right away, or you'll be like, I don't have an answer to that. Okay. But three things from childhood, or as a teenager, just even, it doesn't have to be totally superficial. Like, I had an awesome, I had this one dress that I got from Salvation Army. I don't know what happened to it, but I just wish I still had it. You know, that kind of thing. Or it can be something more significant, like, oh, I had this toy that my grandmother gave me that it's gone. I wish I had it back. But three, like, actual sort of talisman or, you know, some sort of thing that you're like, God, you know, it can be, but like I said, it can be totally superficial. Like, God, I really wish, like, in a weird way, I wish I still wanted to wear exclamation perfume, because it's still out there. I can't stand the smell of it now. But when I think about what my relationship to it was when I first smelled it, I'm like, I kind of wish I could feel that way still about it, because I really loved it.
It's like Debbie Gibson. Yes. Perfume. Yes, I remember that. Oh, my God. Okay, the first thing that popped into my head was my aunt would send me clothing occasionally. And why, for whatever reason, my aunt's fashion overlapped with mine.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
She would send me Laura Ashley dresses.
Amazing.
Oh, corduroy amazing ones.
Oh,
with long sleeves that I think appealed to me that loved Anne of Green Gables and loved Little House on the Prairie.
100%.
Like, happily would have existed in either of those worlds. And then I got a corduroy Laura Ashley dress covered with gigantic, obscene flowers.
Uh-huh.
And I wore it with my Doc Martens.
That's great.
And I was happy as a clown.
That's great.
And now that shit's coming back.
Yeah.
So I would that.
Yep.
I would like one of those dresses. Choice. I had like four or five of them.
Yeah.
Then my dad.
Yeah, don't get greedy.
Yeah, what am I? What am I? Some sort of, okay. My dad built me at one point. He took a massive, I think it was just a huge door, and he made it into a desk.
That's great.
And it was the first time in my school young life that I had this expanse of space just be creative all over.
That's great.
And that was one of the coolest things a parent could do, I think, would be to give your kid a space where you're supposed to be messy, you're supposed to explore things, and it's just for you.
Yes. Love it.
That was awesome.
Love it.
The other thing I really wish I had from those years was my family had this ancient TV record player combo.
Okay. Yep. Mm-hmm. All right. Love
it. Where you could lift the lid up and put on a record and then also watch black and white TV.
Great.
Man, that thing was awesome.
Yeah, that's like the thing where you would take that to Antiques Roadshow and they'd be like, because of the popularity of Mad Men, this is worth $200,000.
Oh my God, yes. Yeah. Antiques Roadshow contender. Like,
by the way, I don't know if anyone talks like that. I think it's a great show. I just want to acknowledge that I have no problem with it.
I think they kind of do.
Joy, this is a real find. I don't know if you know what you have
Walmart
in your hands.
Price but, this is actually not worth anything. Yeah, no, I think you actually channeled that show pretty well from what I've seen
you
on it. Good
okay,
job.
Great. All right, listen, this is, of course, the part where I determine which of these things you're going to end up with in your 100% guaranteed MASH future. So I just need to tell you, you to tell me when to stop.
Okay, stop.
Okay, I'm going to pause this, do a little bit of calculating.
Okay.
I come back, I'm going to give you the answers to your soon-to-be future.
Okay.
Okay.
You know what?
First of all, I realized I was commentating because I was sad when some things disappeared, but it's only because all of these I love, so it's going to be sad no matter what I crossed out.
Okay.
But I did... listen, I couldn't have a higher opinion of the person you ended up with, but a part of me died when I had to cross out both Idris Elba and Clive Owen.
No, Stephen, I love you, and I expect that our future together will be bright, bright and full of laughter.
I mean,
and amazing sex.
Because at the end of the day, you do want somebody that, I mean, like, I'm not sure.
That's
I want to believe that I could, but what I am attracted to about both of those guys is not that I feel like I'm going to be like snorting milk out of my nose because I'm laughing so hard.
It's not the funnies.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. So I want you to enjoy your house with Stephen in Narnia.
We're going to fit right in.
It's going to be great. You know what you don't need in Narnia for whatever reason is clothes.
Oh my God, we could be naked in Narnia?
You created your Garden of Eden in Narnia.
You go through that wardrobe and you leave it all there.
You know what I mean?
Okay.
Take it off. Leave it in the wardrobe.
Oh,
that's
God.
What a wardrobe's for.
You know, this is great. Okay.
And
okay.
You also, there's something, listen, this is what I like about this. All of those things are so, like, they're that feeling that you just described being so liberating and so freeing.
Mm.
And it doesn't surprise me that keeping in line with that, you're not going to have a Miata or a Scout in Narnia. You're going to float into the air and just...
Jesus.
All of it feels so, like, shedding of the skin, right?
Yeah.
So that's how you get around.
Okay.
Imagine that's to be a very athletic undertaking, so
well,
I want you to
know. Well, that's the thing.
Know.
You're burning calories.
Well, you need a lot of peanut butter and cheese.
Oh,
to fuel
fabulous.
Your floating,
protein
flying
fats.
Protein and salty and nutty and delicious.
Mm-hmm,
I want you to, well, you know what? And by the way, if you do need to take a break, or sometimes even if you just want to travel right next to it, you've got your bird of prey companion. So you can either ride your bird of prey or you can like fly in the air alongside.
I want to do that thing where you see some dogs attached to skateboarders.
There you go.
I will be the skateboarder attached to my bird of prey.
There you go. It's okay. Perfect. It's like a really weird windsurfing.
Really lovely relationship.
Okay. Very, very, very deep, interesting, special relationship.
Yes, it's good.
That just leaves us with the fabulous TV and record player that you no doubt have to keep you entertained when you're not doing all those other things.
That'll be in my tree home.
It'll be in your tree home.
Yes.
And... I'm also very appreciative that I'm friends with you because I can finally get to the bottom of what Christian Science is all about because you have a inside line to
somehow
good old Mary.
Stephen Colbert, A Bird of Prey, and Mary Baker Eddy all around the same little stump in Narnia.
That's right.
That actually makes perfect sense.
Would you like another slice of Asiago, Mary?
Oh,
amazing.
God.
Amazing.
That's amazing. Oh, I love it.
Joy, what a complete delight it has been to podcast you. I would love to encourage people, if you would like, to tell them to follow you on Twitter, et cetera, if that even is important to you. Sometimes it's not to a guest. Who cares?
You can find me so easily on that platform. It's just my name, my full name.
Yep.
And I'm so not good at being like savvy with that stuff. Yes, find me there.
There you
go. I will say hello to you.
There you go, guys.
Yeah. And I'm not on Facebook. I left a while ago.
Mm-hmm. Can't blame you.
Really glad.
I really am not. I'm only on it for the podcast because
sure.
It's a good way for people to post stuff.
Yes.
But the problem is that I have a personal account that is linked, of course, to the podcast page.
I wish
and people
you could
contact
do it
me
without.
There.
Yeah.
And then I have to explain to them, like, I know it looked like I was on Facebook, but I was on for JV Club. The message that you wrote me six
right.
months ago, I've just now read.
Yeah. I wish there was a way to yeah. only do it for business.
Yeah. I mean, there probably is. But now I'm sort of, again, it's like I don't even want to be there on there long enough to figure that out. But
no, good for you. Good for you. Just do little drive-bys.
Do some drive-bys. That's what
yeah,
I do.
I'm not a fan of that.
That's what I do. You're wonderful.
I loved being a part of this and was really, really, truly flattered and honored when you asked me.
Joy,
I was
it's a
like,
no-brainer.
Oh,
man. It's a no-brainer.
Hell yeah. Cool.
And guys, I hope you're having a pleasant fall. I don't know if it's fall yet. It's late summer, fall. It's early fall.
It feels like late summer, but technically it's fall.
Okay.
And I cling to that.
Let's cling to everybody. Get out your sweaters from your hope chests.
Think fall thoughts.
Yeah. Yeah.
Please
agreed.
Get us out of the heat.
Agreed. All right, guys. Well, I'll talk to you next time on the podcast. As
As always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.